Motion.
But we'll go ahead and get started. So we'll take a vote on the minutes after, if we are able to get for full quorum. But I don't want to keep you guys longer than necessary, so let's go ahead and get started. All right. I think what we want to do is start by welcoming Jeff to the group. Jeff, do you want to kind of introduce yourself a little bit?
Well, sure. We're seeing half the board is people that I know anyway. As far as a guest, I'm Jeff Worthington. I'm president of the Utah AFL-CIO. I took over January 1st after Dell Cox's retirement at the end of 2017. I've been involved with labor for 39 years in the transportation industry and being part of the AFL-CIO. And so it's a natural transition to still be representing my affiliates and my brothers.
Good. Now we're excited to have you join, and with that, as he said, he replaced Dale. So we are full on employers and we are full on employees. But I mean, you would tell today's attendance, but normally it's a little bit better. And thank you also for Greg, who's on the phone. Is anyone else on the phone besides Greg?
I guess it's just me.
No. Okay. So we do have a vacancy as a public representative, so if you do have suggestions of someone that may be interested in some of the content that we talk about from the public, we're happy to take those suggestions to fill that. Keep in mind that that's the committee makeup. It's 5 employers, 5 employees, and 5 public. It is a 2-year term. Those tend to expire on June 30th. So we will be reaching out to some individuals who have been on the committee for 2 years, either asking to extend if you're interested, or if you are not interested, we will find another representative. So thank you for those that are here. We knew attendance would be a little off today with the responses that we got, but hopefully you still find it interesting. We're going to talk about the legislative process that we just went through, getting any updates there. A suggestion we had a couple councils ago was to talk something beyond unemployment insurance. So we have individuals from the Veterans Division in DWS to talk a little bit about veteran services that we do, and we'll connect that with some of the topics that we're interested in with unemployment and veterans. But we'd like to welcome Nate.
I apologize. I wear a few different hats, and one of them is dealing with media, and our good friend Brian Moulet, we moved them on from a different story that is not unemployment related.
Okay.
So that's good. But it still involves us. So I apologize there. I might have to step out a little bit later for him, but he said at least 30, 40 minutes. So maybe we'll see where.
Do you need a bucket for that name that you just dropped?
Okay. What an awkward place.
He and I go back a long way, so I can make fun of him.
He can.
All the rest of you need to respect him.
No.
I can really go with him.
Dish it out. I'm good.
So I think what we'll do is we'll jump in. I don't want to spend a ton of time on the UI Trust Fund update, but we will talk about it. That is something that we do, so kind of give you a feel for that. But I think a lot of the interest will actually be the legislative process that we just went through. So I've asked Kathy Bonus to, and we're grateful that she came to talk to us about that. So we want to make sure that she has time to kind of talk about any bills that we went through specific to DWS, specific UI, or also answer any questions that you have about legislative bills that maybe you were following or that have passed. So let's jump into it. And just a couple things I think are kind of interesting. If you look actually on the agenda, we try to do kind of a quick snapshot in this little kind of tan box. And I think it's fun to compare this year versus last year, and so it just kind of gives a quick snapshot. You can see the unemployment rate from 3.2 to 3.4. It is a drop, but still really incredible. And then the duration, meaning how long does an average person stay on the unemployment benefit. Remember, the max benefit is 26 weeks, so to be on it for 12 weeks is actually really great. We rank top 10 in the nation with that low duration rate. A lot of that is hand-in-hand with the improved economy. The exhaustion rate is how many people exhaust the full benefit that they are eligible for. Remember, the goal is not only to get the people who are eligible for unemployment to receive the benefit, to keep that money flowing through the economy, but we do want to try to get them off of the benefit as quickly as possible to be able to preserve that trust fund. And in doing so, the trust fund depletion goes down, or the solvency stays up, and we're able to keep those tax rates low because we don't have a big take from the actual trust fund balance. You can see the amount collected. This is the employer contribution or tax collected. You can see we collected about $23 million less in 2017 versus 16. And the benefits paid is the amount of claims taken on the system. We went from 174 million to 156 million. And then your trust fund balance. You can see it's really kind of stayed the same. It's not growing, which is exactly what you want because we maintain that solvency level. And then your average high cost multiple, what that is referring to is at your peak draw on the trust fund, if you were to just have that amount of demand on the trust fund without receiving contributions, how long would the trust fund last? And the recommendation from the Department of Labor is a minimum of 1 year, which is one, and Utah's at 1.75. So it's not full 2 years, but 1 3/4 of a year. You can see that number actually went down, but that is also a good thing. So what it's doing is it's showing that the equation that we have for the trust fund is accounting for this really good economy, slow down on the tax collection, because you can get to a point where you're collecting too much or your trust fund is too large. And so by having that number actually go down, what it's saying is this economy has been such a good run that we are comfortable with where it is at now, and it should remain pretty stable. Okay, and we'll go to some of the graphs, and we'll go through these pretty quickly. Let's go to this one first. This is a holdover from the last council meeting. We showed this one, and what it does is this shows the average Utah tax rate compared to the national average. And it goes year over year from 2008 to 2017. And you can say Utah is 0.34%, meaning we tax 0.3% of total wages paid out in Utah with unemployment, so less than 1%, 0.3%. And compared to the nation, the national average is 0.6%. And so what was an outstanding action item from the last meeting is, well, what is the ranking? We can see that we're 10th. What states are doing that have a lower tax rate than us, and that's what the back of this document is, as an outstanding action item. It'll list all of the states and their tax rates, so you can kind of see Utah's rank of 0.34%. And so remember, that's a point. So in essence, we collect 0.3% in unemployment tax compared to total wages pushed out in the state of Utah. And you want that tax rate to be well, because if you have a good program. So it's great. Questions about that one? Okay, and then we'll just kind of go through some of these documents that have been updated. A thing to point out, if you recall, if you look on the line that says the rate year of 2018, you can see that our social costs went from 0.002 to 0.001. The social cost is paid by every employer, and so that drop resulted in at least a drop in the social cost tax rate for all employers. 77% of employers are only impacted by the social cost rate. So those 77% did see a reduction. The other are affected by the reserve factor, which is evaluated on the trust fund solvency and their experience as employers with former employees collecting unemployment. So that reserve factor went up, and that's a result of the amount of wages going out in Utah growing significantly. I don't think I have this one, but I think this one is interesting as well. In the 2017 tax year, when we were calculating the tax rate, total insured wages, meaning tax wages that are paid to employees, employer-employee relationships that qualify for unemployment tax, they have to be taxed on employment, was $58.6 billion paid out in Kentucky. In 2017, that number went to $62.6 billion. So from 1 year, it increased by $4 billion, the amount of money in wages, that insured wages that is going out in the state of Utah. And so remember, more wages are going out and more people are employed. The liability on the trust fund is larger because it is, if we do have a recession, we will have more employees be eligible, and they will be eligible for a larger dollar amount. So that is what shifts, and if you could switch to the next one, Patrick. Mm-hmm. Oh, not that one, the next one. This one, that top blue line is saying, hey, that's based on the wages. So if we continue to see the economy booming, paying out more wages, that top blue line will keep going up because there's higher liability on the trust fund. And what we're trying to do is maintain that red line in between those blue lines. The red line is the trust fund balance. The top line is the max reserve. The bottom is the low. And that's the reason why we dropped that social cost down, to try and bring that red line between the two. Okay? And then I actually think this one is the most interesting graph. Patrick, if you go back to that one that we kind of skipped. The green bar is the trust fund balance. The red is the amount of taxes collected from employers. The blue is the amount of benefits paid out to plaintiffs. And you can see every time we had a recession, what you're hoping is that the green bar is high prior to the recession. Because what that allows us to do is keep the tax rate low through the recession as that trust fund starts to deplete, and then as we were pulling out of the recession, start to tax at a little higher rate to be able to replenish that trust fund. And that's why you'll see them crossing over and over again. We've just never seen this where we've had such a great run on the economy for 8 straight years, so we've never seen these lines just align like that. But what we want now is that we're collecting about the same amount that we pay now to maintain. And so it's actually designed not only well to keep the tax rate low during the recession, but it's actually proven to, during a long run of good economy, to actually work really, really well too. Questions about that? Yeah, Jeff?
On that, how far out do you project? I mean, looking at our current economic situation in our valley here, with the expansion of the airport, the inland port, tourism, highway work. Do you forecast out that far?
I think I would say that we forecast out just a couple of years. Is that a fair statement, Brad and Patrick? Just a couple of years. I think the more and more you project out, the more off you will be. In the past, I think that we have gotten in the business of trying to predict recessions, and we've gotten out of that business because we at it. And it's really hard to predict. So we try to use the forecast, but remember, the trust fund equation is actually built into code. So we're just following that code. And what we talk about often in this council is to trust that equation. It has proven to be incredibly successful. There's one more, I think. Do we have the trust fund solvency report in there? This one I think is in your packet too, and this actually will kind of validate where we're at. The blue line is the trust fund balance compared to the average high cost multiple. What we talked about is how long can you last at max drawing. Can you last a year? Can you last a year and a half? Can you only last 6 months? That black dotted line is Department of Labor says at minimum you should have at least a year of reserve. And you can see, I haven't done the math, but I think is that 30 states are below, 25 or 30 states are actually still below a year of reserve even after an 8-year economic run like we have. So some of those states are not prepared for the next recession. And the states that are the ones that are higher. Now, last time they ran this report, we were 4th in the nation. Now we're 5th in the nation, which again, I think is a good trend. We don't want to have too much in the reserve. We want to start pulling it back. And so I think the tax rate is adjusting to that by not over-collecting. Did that answer your question, Jeff? I know I kind of went on a tangent.
Yeah, it did. Yeah, now I'm looking at the state trust funds. All of our neighboring states, with the exception of Wyoming, are well below the minimum standard.
Yeah. Well, and some of the scarier ones, if you go all the way to the bottom, California being zero is, considering the number of people they have, is really a dangerous place to be. Last recession, they did go insolvent, did borrow money. And remember, if a state borrows money because their trust fund has gone insolvent, you borrow it from the feds, and the way the feds collect it is they change their federal unemployment tax rate on employees. So by going insolvent, not only do you have to increase your state tax rate to replenish that trust fund, you also get a reduction in your federal tax rate as an employer to replenish or pay back those debts. So some of those states, and again, that's after 8 years of a great economy, they're really in a pretty dangerous situation. So Utah is run really well, and a lot of it is, again, the employers. We feel that we have a good working relationship with employers. We feel that we kind of have a proven system and don't always mess around with it, which is a smart strategy. If you play around with things too much, you never really have a chance to see if you're good. No worries. But this is a really, this one they produce, Department of Labor produces it every year, and it's a real telling. And I think the yellow is states that still owe money. Yes?
Yes.
That borrowed money and still owe money. California would be in the yellow if they had a borrowed
money. What? $3 billion for California outstanding.
Okay, so California owes $3 billion and has $0 in interest. So. Don't move to California. Stay in Utah. And that is all I have about the trust fund update. Any questions there?
Okay. Yes. But before we do,
yes,
I wanted to check and see, did you tell them at all about your recent Maxwell visit?
No.
Is that appropriate? To talk, let them know?
Yeah.
So NASWA is our National Association of State Workforce Agencies. And we were at a conference just a week ago, 2 weeks ago? Just a week ago with a program there where we were recognized.
Yes. And that's a program called SIZE.
Oh.
Yeah, you got to just give them that. It's a program called SIZE. If you respond to any claims, what it is if we have a claimant, someone applies for an unemployment claim, what we do is we get their side of the story, and then we get the employer side of the story, and then we adjudicate that to determine if the person is eligible or not. What we have done is there is a national product called SIZE to electronically send that information to the employer, so the employer can respond electronically and submit the response back to the state. And that is a way to standardize it for employers that have employees across state lines. So whether a person is applying for a claim in Indiana or Utah or California, you as an employer would get the exact same questions if everyone was using SIZE. So it's a way to streamline it, to standardize it, and create an efficiency. And Utah jumped on board to participate in that. And part of the success is, as employers, are you responsive to using the SIZE system in our communication to you? Department of Labor was so supportive of this concept that they have mandated a 50% participation rate of employers responding through the SIZE system. The average across the nation is about a 23% participation rate. Eight states were recognized for meeting more than 50% participation from employers. The second place was 68% of employers participating. Utah was recognized as the top state with 95% of employers using the site system. So it really kind of shows that the employers are, not only is UI designed well, but the employers are incredible partners with us as well. To be 20%, 25% above any other state is really pretty incredible. So that was a great award, so thank you for it. I forgot to mention that. Yeah, Tony?
Is there a cost for the employer?
No.
Okay. So
there's not a cost. The only thing, it's just electronic,
yeah.
So you don't even have to have an app. You just go online, and it's actually linked in with ours, so when you go into our system to pay your contributions or do anything, it's a single sign-on, so we've built that in, and when you sign on, so you actually may think that you're responding to DWS, even though you are using the NASWAL site product. So, no.
Okay.
No cost. So if any of your employers don't know what that is, please feel free to get a hold of us, and we'll walk them through. It is a much better process than a paper process. The reason why they put it together is to try and create an electronic process, and instead of having 50 states all do a different electronic process, create one that's standardized. And we were on board with that. Utah was actually interested. We had an electronic system prior to this, and so we actually disconnected our electronic and signed up with this so that Utah employers would have the same experience regardless of where the center was. So.
No, I wanted to bring that up too, just because I think that one that shows a great amount of work that's taking place with the vision, but also it's a huge testament to our employers.
It is,
and how much they're connected in and willing to work and have a better system, and to be that far ahead of other states, I think it's a great message that it sends to our employers, and a great thank you to our employers for being so. So responsive in that nature. So,
yeah, I didn't want to talk about it because they took a picture, and I am told I always look like I am in pain when I have a picture taken of me. So please.
Great. Well, with that, I want to introduce Kathy Bonus, our Legislative Affairs Director, who is going to give us an update of what happened over our 45 days of legislation taking place.
While Kathy's finding her seat and Dave's getting here, one quick comment.
Yes.
So I've been on this advisory board, like Dave and some of you others, Tony, for a number of years. And honestly, it seems like almost every year your team is being recognized as either being number one or bringing home some kind of an award. And I got it that the employers are 90% participants, and it's a wonderful thing for us. But your guys and your team are doing amazing things too, because you look back over the notes and the minutes of these meetings gone by, you're always in the limelight for doing something nation leading, and I think you ought to be recognized and pat on the back as well, because you're good at what you do.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Well, yeah, the staff are great. I mean, it can be designed as well as you want it, but the staff have to actually implement it.
And
they take it really seriously and do a good job. And not all reputation of state employees is that, but at least in DWS, we believe our state staff work really hard and take that job pretty seriously.
And so when Kevin took over the spot, that's the only words we said to him was, don't screw it up.
You cannot talk to me that way.
When you hand over the keys to a Ferrari, you don't want somebody to crash.
Is that right? But man, I want to drive it fast. Let me give you, Kathy, a microphone.
Oh.
We do have one for us on the phone.
Great.
Hello.
Hi. Okay. So it was a great session for the department as a whole. The majority of the bills, actually all the bills, didn't really impact UI directly. There were a few that we were able to avoid that could have harmfully impacted UI. One being Senator Anderegg wanting to change the appeals timeline for UI cases. We were able to successfully negotiate that bill to go away. Senator Vickers, we had a conversation with him where he was looking to change possibly the formula in our code as to how benefits are, the amounts decided and then the timing for benefits being given out. And so we were able to get that one gone as well. Senator Stevenson reached out during the session and asked if we wanted to require additional data elements for employers when they do their quarterly filing. And based on the conversations we had last year and previous years, I just went ahead and said, nope, we're not interested. But please let me know if you guys think that's a good idea at some point, because I think we have interest on the Hill to do that. There was one bill that passed that HB 364, which modified the definition of an employer in the labor code and then designated a certain sector of the labor market as independent contractors. But this modified the labor code. It did not modify the unemployment insurance code and therefore should not impact our definition of employer as it relates to this program. So those are the only ones impacting UI. A lot of stuff happened with the department. I don't know what you guys want to know or don't know. I don't want to bore you. Bert said I couldn't talk very long. He doesn't. He doesn't want me to take over the meeting. He's heard me give the download on all the bills, and it's like 10 hours later. Can we? So I can talk about the appropriations that we were able to attain. I mean, the big thing for us is this Operation Rio Grande. We're still working on that. We were able to secure about $22 million more dollars this year to continue those efforts. Build the new shelters, maintain law enforcement in the area. The current shelter is where, as well as the new three shelters when they go up. There were a few Medicaid bills that passed, but they all require approval from the federal government, and that can take years. And so we won't know if the Medicaid expansion will go through. We don't know when we'll know if it'll go through, but those are some of the big ones that would impact our operations here. Oh, you guys have any questions? I don't.
So are we engaged at all? Is the department engaged at all at a federal level with what's going on with SNAP? And because that would clearly impact, I mean, it's beyond the scope of UI, but.
Yeah, so we are. We have to work through the governor's office. They have a person that's delegated to that specific work, working with Congress on legislative issues. And so when we bring these issues forward, we go through the governor's office and then they work directly with the contacts in D.C. We haven't proactively done anything about the food stamp. I think we're just waiting to see more information come out before we take a position as an executive branch. But we are aware. We are getting the reportings on the different issues going on.
Is there, Dave, is there a specific thing you're concerned about?
I mean, yeah, I mean, if you
world,
have.
But
it's the thing that scares me is the commodity boxes.
Oh, yeah.
And thinking that the government is going to be able to deliver food more effectively than the private sector.
Yeah.
And for those that don't know what Dave's talking about, right now, when a person is determined income eligible, they receive an EBT card, an electronic benefit transfer card. It has a set number of dollars. It's not a cash benefit. It's actually, it is only an electronic benefit. It is restricted on what it can purchase. So if I go to a grocery store and I purchase food items and then I purchase things that are not food items, like shoes, and I swipe that card, it would electronically be able to say, I can pay for these, I cannot pay for shoes. The thought, or at least the presentation was, hey, if you're over $90, we're going to give you a box of food. It is really stepping back quite
it's government cheese lines all
way back.
Yeah.
Way back.
I haven't heard a lot of tread on that actually happening.
I think the thing that will always come up, and I think it came up in our local legislature about restricting what food stamps can buy, like not buying soda or not buying candy. Mm-hmm. I think that's always a topic that tends to come up over and over again. A lot of the talk about mandatory participation, Utah already is involved in that mandatory participation, so it wouldn't change what we do day to day. The nice part about DWS and all of these benefit services being connected to the workforce services is anybody that is applying for unemployment, for food stamps, for Medicaid is immediately, they're going through the website that is employment focused. And so I think we're designed really that way, and whenever we have an opportunity to require employment or job search efforts, we always. So we're on board with that, but that shouldn't change what food stamps can pay for. It's just what they have to do to maintain. I would be surprised if food boxes went anywhere.
Yeah, me too. But if you hear anything here and you want us to know anything, feel free to email us and we can.
Yeah, Kathy's right. We don't usually, we'll talk with federal partners about compliance, but not advocate for
policy changes. Yeah.
Because we have the governor's office that is responsible for that.
That's all I got, unless there's something new. Do you guys have any questions about our other division?
Yeah, please, first, you guys. I thought of one thing that might be of interest to them, but anything, any bill that you were following or that you're curious about?
Glad it's in the rear view mirror.
Right?
Although it seems to be more heavily involved outside of session.
For us, because we now have to implement, right?
Yeah, so we have to implement everything. Then we have the interim. We have all these reports that we're supposed to do. We have studies.
Yes.
Yeah, it's the legislative process. Kathy, the worksheet, it gets more and more complicated. And it used to be a lot easier.
That's what I hear.
It used to be a lot easier. I just thought about the SAEA funds and what we use for those. So just to give you an idea of what SAEA funds are, in the state of Utah, if we have a claimant that receives a benefit and we determine that they have been fraudulent, so let's say they receive $1,000 in unemployment, we require them to pay that $1,000 back, but we also on top of that do a 100% penalty. So a person that has $1,000 in fraud actually has to pay DWS back $2,000. The $1,000 is always paid up front or first and goes back into the trust fund to keep that tax rate low. $1,000 is put into what's called a penalty and interest fund and is used for job growth initiatives. And so it is a reserve based on just that 100% penalty and that penalty and interest. And so is given or is available for job growth efforts. And so DWS asks for the authority to spend some of that money to do some job growth initiatives in an effort to keep connecting the job seeker scene and jobs in DWS and get them prepared for the workforce of the future. So I don't know if you know this, I don't have the specifics about what we requested for SAEA funds or the dollar amount?
$2.8 million.
Because
we have to put 25%, I believe, back in the trust fund. There's a.
Yeah.
The code requires that if we're going to use the money outside of UI, we have to take a 25% chunk of it and put it back into the trust fund. So $2.8 million was available this next fiscal year. So, we'll be using it to train individuals for specific industry jobs. So we're trying to marry industry and education for the current job market. So once they get through their training, they're put directly into a job that matches their training. So we've been doing that for several years. So we'll just continue that grant process.
Do you have a sense, Kevin, for how often there are those fault overpayment findings? I think they're pretty rare, aren't they?
Yes,
fraud.
I think
so. Not fault, but fraud.
Fraud overpayment,
yeah,
I think.
So we have a distinction between fault and fraud.
If I recall, and Justin's here as the chief of benefits, the overpayment rate is under 2%. Like the fraud rate is under 2% nationally.
So as far as the amount of overpayments for fraud that we collect, from
yes,
the setup,
or maybe that's total overpayment.
It's really small.
Yeah.
exact number I'm not comfortable saying off the top of my head, but it's the single digits definitely, and it's going to be fairly comfortable with five, so it's pretty low. Because it's kind of, there's a few elements you have to meet to establish fraud. Not everyone can show that they're willfully acting in a fraudulent nature, but I mean, we do get them. I mean, probably daily we set up a fraud issue.
Is the distinction between fault and fraud that fraud is immediately payable back and fault overpayments are deducted from future benefit?
No, it's just the burden of proof and their level of intent as far as getting the money.
No, I understand from a proving point of view, but as far as paying it back with fraud, you've got to pay it back right now, don't you?
It's still the collection process.
Yeah, right.
It's the same collection process. And in fact, we have about, 10 to 13 million in collectibles out there from fraud, but it's just really difficult to get money out of people who don't have money, right? So
how does that compare with other states? I mean, with our 100% penalty, did it deter it at all?
I think the 100%, so Mary, kind of write some of these action items down for future, because we can talk about the fraud and you can bring in some people that work in our collections unit. I think the 100% of penalty, if I recall, is steep.
It's not unusual. There are states who have a steeper penalty.
I know one state had a 400%.
There's 400,
there's one that has a 600% penalty?
Yeah,
but they don't enforce it.
Yeah, the thing is, I mean, what Kathy said is correct, is a lot of the people who are being fraudulent, you're not going to collect a lot on that money. However, we did get $2.8 million.
Well, $4 million, and then, but $2.8 for these grants.
Correct. So that is available to use, and what we want to do is make sure, again, remember that we won't collect on that until after the trust fund is reimbursed, and then that, on top of that, then we'll collect on that.
Justin, I think your question is the distinction between the two. If you're confounded, have a fraudulent overpayment, we will not allow you to collect benefits moving forward. You cannot use additional future benefits to pay back a fraud overpayment or a fraud penalty either. It has to come from the individual who has to pay it back. Fault can be used to repay. We will allow you to continue. Now, we'll take 100% of your benefits
right
until the fault is repaid. But there's really no incentive to go either way. It's purely out of law reason that that's how we find it.
So if you have an overpayment that's not fraud, we will take it from your unemployment. If you are fraudulent, we will shut your benefit down and require you to pay it back, not use it.
And that stays indefinite until the money is repaid.
Yeah. But we'll get some of the numbers about national.
I wonder how we compare with other states, mm-hmm. and if that penalty is a deterrent. I didn't know there was one. So.
We'll look at that. I do know that we do actively have a collections unit. One of the things that we did do when we were at the national conference, some states don't even have a collections unit to try and attempt to collect on any overpayments. We don't think that's wise. We think we should have. So, but we'll evaluate the steepness of the penalty compared to the other states. We can do that. Anything else? And then the last thing that I had was that we did ask for some funds, or at least the authority to spend, to continue to modernize our unemployment systems. So in UI, we have the CAP, or the CUB system, which is our benefits system, and then we have the CAP system, which is our employer contribution system. We have modernized our CUB system, or we'll complete our modernization of our benefit system July into next year, and then we'll stabilize it for a few months after. And we've moved to a .NET technology away from Versada.
It was a Java-based stuff.
Yeah,
Versada.
Versada was the technology. They were going to increase our cost by 800% in licensure. And so we said, enough of that. We're going to develop our own code, like open source code, which is .NET, so that we can maintain without licenses. So now what we have is we have this modernized CUB system, the benefit system. And so now we're looking at where we can align our contribution system to have that same technology. And so we did ask for some funds to finalize our benefit system modernization and to start with our collections and imaging system in CATS to be the same technology. That is not from the trust fund. That is not a tax from the employers. That was an award that was received from Utah several years ago that is dedicated funds for UI modernization. We have to legislatively, though, ask for the authority to spend that money. And so it's usually not a really heavy ask. It's usually not complicated to get it. But we do want to keep our systems modernized and use that money wisely because in IT, you guys know this, becomes outdated very quickly. And so what we want to do is continually to modernize so that we can continue to run the program effectively, because IT is critical to effective programs. So we'll keep doing that, and then next year we'll take a look and see if there's other pieces we want to modernize. But that was great that we had the authority to spend that.
Thank you. Sorry I had to step out.
Who were you on the phone with?
Ah, Brian Lay. A joke, he just. All right, so we just completed the. Yeah, I dropped the name, so he was rousing for it. We just did the legislative update. We're done there?
We are.
Okay, wonderful. Let's move on. We want to talk about major activities within the department. Specifically, you know, talking about the military and veterans. So, Kevin, you want to talk a little bit about the unemployment compensation for ex-service members, and then we have, not Bruce, but Bill, who's with our Veterans Employment Services team, here and is going to give an update for us on what's taking place there.
Okay. I just wanted to do a quick, and then we'll turn the time over to Bill. But unemployment insurance does have what's called the UCX program, or the unemployment compensation for ex-service members. So when an individual is serving our country and then their tour ends, it is considered like a layoff. And a person can actually come and apply for unemployment benefits or UCX benefits to help them transition from serving the country back into the workforce. And so that is how a group that we serve in unemployment insurance. I do have a couple interesting facts here that were just kind of released. Should we do the quiz stop?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to have guesses.
My answer is 14.
14.
Raise the hand. Oh, were we supposed to wait for the question?
What is the national unemployment rate in 2017?
Okay.
It is not 14.
It was
4.5.
4.4% in 2017. What was Utah's unemployment rate? National's 4.4. 3.1% was the 2017 average in Utah, which is the lowest it's been.
Full employment.
It is full employment. I think they say 5% is full employment, so it's well below full employment. I mean, you have to have some people transitioning in and out of jobs, or else you'll never be able to replenish lost workforce. Now, specific to veteran unemployment rate, what is the national veterans unemployment rate? So the national unemployment rate is 4.4%. The national veterans unemployment rate is? 2017 was? 3.7%. Actually, it's lower. So in Utah, the unemployment rate is 3.1%. What is the veteran unemployment rate in 2017 for Utah? 2.9%. So really an incredible statistic, and a lot of it is Utah employers, again, being great with veterans and taking that responsibility very seriously, but also some of the veteran services. So, Bill, why don't I turn the time over to you?
Great, thanks. Yeah, it's kind of interesting because I know Gary Harder from the State Department of Veteran and Military Affairs. He was at a conference back east, and there was a representative from South Carolina, and they said employers there do not want to hire veterans. And the reason was is they felt they were just ticking time bombs. Whereas here in Utah, people want to hire veterans in most cases, and because they show up and they get the job done, and that's really a very good thing. So my name is Bill Greer. I am the local veterans employment rep, which means my responsibility is to work with the employers. Bruce Summers, who is our chief, he's over all of the veteran services. And he, even though he doesn't directly manage, he's responsible for the DVOPs, the Disabled Veteran Outreach Placement Specialists, of which we have about 15 around the state. Right now we have a couple of vacancies. And the ACE program, and that's the Accelerated Credentialing to Employment program. And what that is where we can help people transitioning out of the military so that then they can get the credentials they need on the outside. And that's a very good program. It's state funded, it's not a federal funded program. So people who may not qualify for federal programs qualify for that. I wish they would have had that when I got out of the Navy. One day I'm there shooting x-rays, suturing people, giving shots, and the next day they won't even let me take out the garbage because they have housekeeping services that do that because I didn't have the credentials for the outside to do those things. So, I mean, it really is a great program to help. And we've also strengthened that with the Utah Veteran-Owned Business Partnership Program. And I'll mention a few of those things. So we're trying to give support, especially to the veterans that need intensive services, those that are disabled, those transitioning, and many of those who just got into the military and then did 4 years, 2, 3, 4 years, and get out. It's almost like they just got out of high school. They don't really know what they want to do, and they don't understand what valuable experience they had as in the military. Many of them were responsible for training people, managing, directing operations, responsible for millions of dollars worth of equipment. Then they get out, and he's asking, "What did you do?" "Oh, I was a grunt. You know, I was in the infantry. You know, we were trained to kill people and stuff." And yet, they have all these other skills that are very valuable to employers as well. And on the other hand, we want to try and train employers and help them understand what valuable skills and abilities these veterans have as they come out. So I'm going to go through just a couple of the programs, the additional programs that we have that might be of interest to you related to the employers. We also have a Utah Patriot Partnership Program. Many of you may already belong to that program. It indicates that you're a veteran-friendly company, especially if you post jobs with Workforce Services. And that way, and that's a paper that we just passed out for that program. If you're not a member of that, we'd love to sign you up. You get a nice certificate from Governor Herbert. You can use our logo in your advertising. And as I mentioned, if you post jobs with Workforce Services, it indicates to the job seeker that you're a veteran-friendly company. And those are pretty important. As of today, we have 2,142 of the employers in Utah are registered Utah Patriot Partners. Some of the biggest questions are, well, do they really hire veterans? There's no obligation, there's no cost to participate in the program, no obligations. As of today, there are 474, 22% of them have current job openings. And in the last 6 months, 702, or about 33%, had job openings. The thing is, people ask me, is that good, is that bad? Well, and when we look at whenever a person signs up, they usually have open job openings, and so it's in the 70, 80, 90% of those that are posting jobs at that time when they enroll in that program. And we like to think that they are hiring veterans, and those veterans end up staying, and which means they have better retention than in some of the other areas. So I think that's an important thing. As I mentioned, this veterans, the Utah Patriot Partner Program, then we have the Federal Department of Labor has a brand new program, and it's called It's a Higher Vets Medallion program. And right now, it doesn't cost anything to join this program, and we have some information for this, for your organizations, as well as for other organizations you may associate with as well. And so those are some other things, programs that might be helpful. You'll pass that one out to you. That's just some questions. So what exactly do we do? As we were just talking about, our veteran unemployment rate is much even lower than the state unemployment rate. I have companies calling me almost every day wanting to hire veterans. When I took this job a little over 3 years ago, the veteran unemployment rate was 7.2%, and the state rate was 4.2%. And they charged us and our veterans team to get our veteran unemployment rate down to the state rate. Within a year, we had it down to the 4.2%, but unfortunately, the state rate had dropped down to the 3.9% at that time, and so we had to keep working. But now we've got that veteran unemployment rate below the state unemployment rate. The challenge is, so when I would send out emails to people letting veterans know, registered job seekers know the events that we have, we do job fairs and these things, I was sending out to over 8,000 registered job seekers. Like I said, that was just a little over 3 years ago. And then, why don't you pass that one out too? So this last time, just a few weeks ago, we had a job fair and I sent out one last email to the people, the registered veteran job seekers. It was about 2,000. So it's come down from over 8,000 to 2,000. I also included then the people who are registered getting food stamps, Medicaid, or any other service, unemployment insurance, those things, and we got it up to 2,500 people. So that's all that we've got registered with us. But as the local veterans employment rep, I also work with a number of other organizations dealing with veterans. And so as employers post their jobs and send me their job listings, I take and send those out to our veteran and community network, which includes the Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve, the National Guard, the Reserve units. We've got Naval Reserve, Marine Reserve, and some of those. We also have in this state many colleges that have veterans offices. So we send these jobs out to the local veteran offices in the colleges. That includes places like BYU, UVU, University of Utah, Davis Applied Technology College. Oh, it's not that applied anymore. Davis Technology College, and some of these other organizations, so that we get a little wider reach than just those who are registered with Workforce Services. And that's our goal, is really to get our jobs out so that we can get good employees for the companies that are hiring there. We've been working with some call to actions the last few years dealing with older workers, older veterans, and that this year's is underemployed veterans, because we know there are veterans out there that need better jobs. And then the other one is those who are incarcerated. In the last couple of years, we've started in our district courts, in the 3rd and 4th districts, veterans courts, much like the drug courts that they have and some of the mental health courts in the court system. These are veterans courts that try to understand the nuances of veterans. And this is also, employment is one of the major responsibilities there. And then in addition to that, if you pass those out too, they started a veteran-owned business partnership to really help veterans who are trying to start a business. I mentioned the ACE program, Accelerated Credentialing. We can help pay for benefits or tools for them or certifications to help them get started with their particular program. I participated with the governors, or lieutenant governor, I guess it's the governors, but the lieutenant governor went around with the 25,000 jobs in the rural part of the state, and that's really what we need to do, is actually begin some businesses there. Well, we have a couple of things. They hired a person to help with that veteran-owned business partnership, whether people are thinking of starting a business or if they have a business and want to expand. This is the 3rd annual Veteran-Owned Business Conference, and that's coming up here next month on on May the 11th is when that is. And then Jackie Hobson, who is that veteran-owned business specialist, she's put together a veteran-owned business breakfast series. And this next handout has the listing of, and they're trying to do them around the state. You'll see a big focus on outside the Wasatch Front, although some are here along the Wasatch Front as well. But this is another aspect to try and help our veterans either be able to get a job as well as to start their own business, which then helps with, you know, as we deal with the unemployment insurance, we hope that their business grows and is able to meet all of the obligations there. And then we partnered with Hilton, with Hilton to try and assist our veterans as well. And this is where we have a memorandum of understanding with the Hilton program to help veterans who are looking for employment, housing, or getting training that's more than 50 miles from their home. Hilton will give them 100,000 points. We are the only state that says if a veteran is starting their own business, that they a qualifying activity that, you know, that's for starting a business that's more than 50 miles from their home, they would be able to get the 100,000 points. And that's been helpful on several veterans who are starting their own business. We had one that's starting a business here in Salt Lake, but they've got suppliers down in Price. So we were able to give them 100,000 points. They could stay at the Anthem Inn in Price, Utah, and that helps reduce their costs of getting that particular business started. So we have lots of resources here at Workforce Services to assist veterans, whether they're trying to get a job or they're trying to start a business. And we've been generally pretty successful at doing that. And we work closely with employers like some of you folks trying to help those veterans get the kind of jobs that will help them sustain their families, sometimes help them sustain their businesses too. I know some of them need a job to keep their business going as well. So it just kind of varies on the situation. Does anybody have any questions?
Okay. Yes, please. I like all these job opportunities you're offering. Have you heard of our helmets to hard hats through the trade?
Yes, as well. And we also combined with the SBA, also with the boots to business. So we do closely. In fact, I've seen some of the folks with the helmets to hard hats, and they can take advantage of some of these programs as well.
Yeah, they're full apprenticeship programs, so they get paid while they learn and
right.
Placed on a job. So it's on-hands training, and when you come out, you're either licensed or certified.
Yep.
And you can come out of it after a 4 or 5 year program as a licensed journeyman.
And we try to encourage people along that line. We had an individual, I sent out emails to your group as well as a number of others that are registered with the Department of Labor certifications. I had one individual, and I got back more than a dozen different saying, hey, we can help them. And many of them, like you said, you know, will pay for their education as well, send them to school, and pay them while they're doing it. And we think that's a great program. So yes, we are partnered with several of your groups and some of your.
It's a beautiful
things.
Program.
It is.
You end up coming out of licensed journeyman with no debt.
Right.
And a very good wage while you're learning, and when you come out of licensed journeyman, your wage basically doubles. So.
And we work to partner with as many programs as we possibly can. So you're absolutely right.
I just want to make that aware that we do have.
Yes.
That.
And a couple things that will help. So what we'll do is we will electronically get a copy of these and send it out to the council so that you guys have these documents electronically. The UCX, the individuals who are ex-service members that are coming in for unemployment, are assigned to a specific worker. So if you do have information that you want me to know, please send it to me. And we also can easily connect to our various work centers, our 30 plus job centers across the state to advertise certain programs. So I can be a good connecting point if you have additional questions about this, or if you have information that you think that job seekers or veterans that are unemployed should know about, get it to me and then I'll route it in the right direction so that we connect to the right people.
Right. And you see on the Hilton application, which is on the back of the flyer, it does ask if they are on UCI or UCX. We're trying to track the information as well with all the people participating.
All right. Thank you, Bill.
Thanks.
We want to just thank Bill and Bruce, who's not here with us, but our veterans employment team is doing outstanding work. And they're across the state, and these new call to actions that they've taken on, I mean, they're not settling saying, hey, we're below 3% unemployment. They're looking now at the underemployed, incarcerated veterans, and taking that next step. And it's harder work. It is a lot harder work. It's more challenging, but it's where we need to focus our attention on it. And so we're really appreciative of the hard work they do there.
Yeah, and there's a lot to absorb. If you have questions, again, connect to me, and then I'll connect you to Bill. Okay? So just use me as a resource to connect, either to share information or get answers to questions. Just connect to me, and we'll make sure that you get the response or the advertising that you need.
All right. We have a full forum.
We don't have a full. We have a majority.
Majority. Okay.
So we can approve our minutes.
With that, then, do we have a motion to approve our minutes from December 12th, 2017?
So moved.
We have a second?
Second.
All right. With that, our minutes are approved. Do we have any other business? Any business from members? All right.
Greg, anything from you, or any questions from you, Greg?
Thanks for asking. I thought it was a great report. Good news on UI. Great.
Yeah, I think the UI fund is great, but also it seems like it was a good topic about veterans, about how high you guys guessed the veterans unemployment rate was in the actuality. So
thank you.
Several years ago you'd have been right, but not now because of all the activity.
Yeah.
I mean, 14 was close.
My answer was 14.
Yeah, I'm impressed with the reduction in unemployment. Amazing.
Yeah.
You're to be commended, Bill, on that.
I mean, DWS is a large organization. What are we, 2,300 employees now? I'm just always amazed.
Biggest state agency.
Yeah. Second.
Oh, really? Who's bigger?
Yeah. Human Services is the largest state agency.
Wow. Oh, I got to give Pierpont a hard time about that.
Number two. We're the most public-facing state agency.
Best run.
There we go.
Best looking. Have you seen the human service people?
You then know Brian Wood.
Point made. There we go. And with that, our next meeting is scheduled on August 16th. And we'll have details go out about that.
And if there is a service that you are interested to learn more about, we have some follow-up items that we'll talk about fraud and the comparisons. But if there is a service offered by DWS that you are interested in, I'm trying to find one that's a good balance that is interesting or appears to be interesting to you guys while not ignoring a lot of the standard topics that we talk about in the council. So.
One quick note, tomorrow we will have the latest numbers on Utah's unemployment rate and job growth will be released tomorrow, so you'll see that go out from the department. Our director, John Pierpont, will have an op-ed. It's kind of talking about the latest workforce activity that is happening both nationally and here locally, and so you'll see that as well. So those are just a few things that you'll be seeing tomorrow.
Sneak preview.
Yes.
What is the sneak preview?
You
don't want to give that John, do you?
Can't get ahead of John.
Tweet it out. Steal John's
tweet. And if you, and yeah, we can, no previews on the numbers.
Can you give it?
I don't know them.
No, you can't.
No, it's something, they are very, BLS is very tight.
You can do it in hushed tones.
No. Don't leave the law making questions for the volume of tones.
All right, with that, we have a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
All right, thank you. Thanks, Greg.